How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today is actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
When Ryan says when it's time to begin, it's on the Rewind Around with John Pollock and Waiting. The A-Team that makes sense of these things we see in the ring every week on TV. It's Rewind Around for Monday night, download a Tuesday morning from the Post Wrestling site. It's Rewind Around for Monday night on USA Now on the John and Wade Take the Mic.
Hello, everybody. It's John Pollock and Waiting. And I'm a little out of sorts because, you know, we were having a little bit of a disagreement just before we started. And then out of nowhere, Wade just tells me, you know what, John? The fact is you're just not good enough. And I thought right in advance of our anniversary next month, I thought that that was a lot of tension that has been building. But unfortunately, you and I will not be getting any award nominations for what we saw tonight involving one Kofi Kingston and
no.
Xavier Woods. Yes.
No, I hope you and I never have a scene like that. That would be terrible.
I would definitely tell the camera to cool it. Leave us alone. We're going to talk in private. I mean, is that moment the epitome of the invisible camera is just, it's a staple of pro wrestling that nobody is going to bat an eye over.
Well, I mean, didn't you see the CM Punk behind the scenes video today? I mean, clearly these people have cameras in front of their faces all the time in real life anyway, whether or not in story. So they're used to it, I'm sure.
Yes, you sign away every right to privacy once you enter this company, and there will always be a camera on you. Okay, this is the Truman Show across the board.
We all kind of live it. Everybody's got a camera in their pocket right now. Yeah.
Well, we will get into tonight and the fracturing of the New Day. Lots to get to on tonight's edition of Raw. A packed house in Glendale, Arizona, as they would remind us. A sellout.
All right.
Glendale on your list of destinations to one day make it to Arizona by extension?
Glendale specifically? I don't really know what there is.
How about the state of Arizona just in general?
Yeah.
You would like to go to Arizona.
I'd love to go to Phoenix. It sounds like a nice place. Yeah. Why not?
No shade on Glendale. You're being very specific about where you would go in the state.
I don't often hear enough things about Glendale, but I wouldn't say no to a trip.
Okay. Well,
that sounds like you're trying to get me to throw some shade on Glendale.
I'm not at all. I'm just asking. You were the one that diverted. You said, I would love to go to Arizona, but Glendale, you seemed a little bit like, let's go to the Mecca of Arizona. Okay.
I think you're projecting a little there, but okay. All right.
Well, onto the news front we go. Actually, before we do that, I will alert everyone to a bonus double shot that you may have gotten in your feed today on the Post Wrestling Cafe. As Wei and I spent about 40 minutes chatting about Sunday's Bloodsport 12 event, headlined by Josh Barnett and MVP, and Josh Barnett giving a very spirited speech. All right, this was not quite Paul Heyman level, but Josh was certainly giving it his best here, at least giving Scott D'Amore a run for his money at the end of this show. But 10 matches on the show, and yes, we talk about MVP and Josh Barnett. We discuss the Speedball Mike Bailey Josh Alexander match, but really it is David, the Machine, Mads Manashvili of Georgia that is truly the the focus of our attention and the reason we did a whole bonus show to talk about this man entering professional wrestling, a former Olympic silver medalist. And I know what you're going to say. Wait a minute. If you're an Olympic silver medalist, you don't become a former Olympic silver medalist. Oh, yes, you do. Because, in fact, once you give those drug samples, they can always be tested, and those medals, they can always be revoked. But this man has found his calling, and it was at Josh Barnett's Bloodsport.
Yeah, yeah. For people watching, it's the man on the right here.
Thank you for making us aware of which one it was. But yeah, and he had a tremendous opponent here in Matt Mikowski. But this was Yeah, I mean, the guy got please come back chants at the end.
Yeah, I mean, John's
the opposite
just...
of what the IOC was chanting.
As far as I know, I don't think they test at GCW, but well, whatever. Like, I mean, this was a tremendous, I think, performance from this guy in his very first professional wrestling match. But I mean, we don't really just talk about that. For me, Bloodsport is just something that no matter how busy we are with our wrestling schedules, I still make time for. And that's because it offers something so different in the wrestling landscape. And I also think it's very obvious that other promotions and every wrestler kind of understands that, because this is also a show that features talents from WWE, AEW, and TNA all under the same card. So it continues to be, I think, a pretty special event. And we'll be talking about, you know, people like Carmen Petrovic and Charlie Dempsey and Miles Bourne from NXT, how they looked in, under a Bloodsport umbrella. Marina Shafir wrestling on the show. The former Xia Li, Lei Ying Li, having a match against Masha Slamovich. So a lot of really, like, interesting things to talk about.
Yes, and you will get myself and Wei also breaking down the technical application of mother's milk.
Yes. Excellent.
Which she totally stole that name from Wei back in his tournament days. That's actually what he used to call his finisher.
Oh, yes, of course. Yeah.
Okay. All right. We move on over to several news items. We're going to start off with Conor McGregor. Off the top, I really highly recommend for people that are following this story and want a really good kind of dissertation of it. Luke Thomas over at Morning Combat and his own YouTube channel did this hour-long interview with this reporter with News Talk in Ireland. He's also he's a very well-known crime reporter. He also does a podcast, Inside the Crime. They did a whole podcast covering the trial. His name is Frank Graney, and he spoke about – he was in the court day after day, and even listening to this Wei, and I had been following this pretty closely, like there were details in this that I was hearing, like just from – the different reporters, like there's little details you hear. One thing that was really, I would say pretty noteworthy in this discussion was just Frank Graney describing how those in the courtroom got to see the photos of Nikita Hand and the bruising that she endured after this incident in December of 2018, and just describing the photos is just horrific, and that the paramedic stated they were the worst that they had ever seen of someone in this state, and black and blue from head to toe. And it's like I had a sense of like this bruising obviously was concerning, and hearing his description, I mean, it was quite something. And I think that was probably a big key to this, is a lot of like the forensic evidence and those that testified in terms of those that examined Nikita Hand. I'm sure that played a very big role in the jury that did find Conor McGregor civilly liable. So for the timeline of this, they will now be back in court on Thursday, because now it's a case of figuring out like like who is paying what here. And it's a bit of a interesting case, because Conor McGregor was found civilly liable, and typically like in these cases when you lose, like you have to cover the expenses. But his friend, the co-defendant James Lawrence, they did not find him civilly liable, and therefore it's unknown if Nikita Hand may be on the hook for any of his legal fees and such. And that's a part that is also stressed here, is the fact that, you know, you have a lot of people that in these cases quite unfairly will look at the victim, and the first thought is they are going after money. And the fact is, like, this was an enormous risk for her to go the civil route, because in the event of a loss and not being able to prove this, like, she would have been on the hook for all of these legal fees. And you can imagine the legal fees that would be attached to Conor McGregor. Like, he has one of the largest attorneys, barristers over there in Ireland, who has represented some really, really high profile cases as well about this. But I would encourage people to go listen to this interview. Jack Wannon has also written a story about the interview on the website. So if you want to go to postwrestling.com, that is there for people to check out. It's a really engaging and in like gives you a lot of the facts and details of somebody that was right there firsthand in the courthouse. And also, like, speaking about the reaction to Conor McGregor, who, like, it has sounded as though, not just with this case, but over a lot of time, that Conor McGregor's reputation in Ireland has gone down dramatically. Like, this guy, like, certainly he is going to have his contingent of support, but it seems like he has just, like, I have seen so much written over the weekend of just a lot of opinion pieces and such that have just, like, really taken Conor McGregor to task here. And the first, I would say, significant shoe to drop in terms of damage to Conor McGregor's image and business is IO Interactive, who are the they are the distributor of the Hitman video game that Conor McGregor has a role in their latest release. And they put out a statement that in light of the recent court ruling regarding Conor McGregor, IO Interactive has made the decision to cease its collaboration with the athlete, effective immediately. We take this matter very seriously and cannot ignore its implications. Consequently, we will begin removing all content featuring Mr. McGregor from our storefronts starting today. That being on Monday. And I mean, to this point, UFC has not issued any type of public statement about Conor McGregor. McGregor's also a co-owner of BKFC. They have not stated anything. I don't know how much this will permeate into his fight career, but outside of fighting, when it comes to movies that he has been attached to, brands, the Rape Crisis Network in Ireland is like making a campaign for retailers to stop selling all of Conor McGregor's like whiskey and products, to divest themselves of selling his products. Like he has his reputation is in the dirt, and it might not, like, fighting is this weird insulated world from a lot of this stuff. But in the real world, this is going to harm Conor McGregor. I would say significantly. And this, you know, this omission from a video game is perhaps just the first thing, because he's got his name and brand across a lot of forms of entertainment, not just sport.
Yeah. When we first discussed this story on Friday, I was extremely cynical about much of this hurting his image, because I think I've been in a very cynical state about how often people like this might get a pass in the public recently. And I'm happy to see, at least with this video game company, that they seem to care. And hopefully others might seem to care about something like this. I mean, I don't know much more, like, how much more you really need in order to be uncomfortable, I suppose, you know, supporting this man and all the endeavors that he's involved with. Even if the UFC, I think, has kind of gained a bit of a reputation as, like, almost a haven for, like, people who, like, don't really give a shit about this sort of thing, I'm glad that, like, there are other industries where Conor is involved with, and other people are involved with, that might still.
Yeah, I mean, the UFC got a break because this past weekend's card was in Macau. I don't believe Dana White was over there. And then this weekend, they're off. But the following weekend is their next pay-per-view in Las Vegas. And I'm thinking that's going to be the first kind of public event where a Dana White would be asked about Conor McGregor. And, like, we will see. Like, Dana White has a history of, like, my thought is he's either going to just, like, blow it off and say, hey, we're going to Conor's off and we don't know what's going on, or I think he's just going to pledge his loyalty to Conor McGregor. Like, I would be very stunned to see any, like, condemnation of Conor McGregor, but you can't put words in people's mouth. But they do have, like, 2 weeks to prepare, because I think that this story will be, UFC will have to comment on it. And
if the journalists ask, and do you think the story is, I mean, you have to think the story is big enough that a journalist would ask, right?
I think it would be asked. I do. Yeah. Conor McGregor did. So he had a weekend of posting and deleting messages online. His last message that he put up sometime this afternoon on X was that, quote, people want to hear from me. I needed time. I know I made mistakes. 6 years ago, I should have never responded to her outreaches. I should have shut the party down. I should never have stepped out on the woman I love the most in the world. That's all on me. As much as I regret it, everything that happened that night was consensual, and all the witnesses present swore to that under oath. I have instructed my legal team to appeal the decision. I can't go back, and I will move forward. I am beyond grateful to my family, friends, and supporters all over the world who have stayed by my side. That's it. No more. Getting back to the gym. The fight game awaits. And so that is his statement, and I mean we will see what he proceeds if he in fact goes. I believe he has about 28 days to file an appeal, and we will see where that goes. But then it's, you know, the burden is on him to present an appeal, and that there was some issue with the way that the court adjudicated this case, and if there is some argument. But that's where it is. And he's like, I just think this is a very, very damning finding on Conor McGregor and his image. And I think that certainly it feels in Ireland like this is a mainstream story.
So you're saying on Friday, you weren't seeing much mainstream coverage of this story outside of Irish press. Has that changed on Monday?
I've seen more of it. I wouldn't say this has been like a sweeping story in the U.S., but I mean, the big outlets are covering it because...
Is it growing?
I think so. Yes, I do. And the fact that you have like a major company like with a pretty popular game dropping him, I mean, now you have like a business aspect to this, that some of these outlets are going to more focus on the business side rather than the gritty details of what is... of what was presented in court. But now you have like a business story attached to it as well. That I can see other places, like just throwing out like an example, like a Sports Business Journal. Now that like opens up an outlet that looks at, you know, how this harms the UFC, how this harms, you know, Conor McGregor. So I do imagine, and the fact that he is looking to appeal this, they will be back in court this week. I mean, there is I think there's a lot of attention on it, and the Irish press have gone very hard on Conor McGregor, and I don't think he did himself any favors with kind of his responses over the weekend and deleting messages and such, and just seemed to be posting out of anger and frustration, and that was struck a lot of people as just a real sour note on top of everything else before you even get to that. So that is the latest on Conor McGregor. We'll go to a more easier topic, I guess, to break down. The Continental Classic, we got the announcements of the participants going into the tournament that kicks off on Wednesday in Chicago. So like last year, we have the Gold League and the Blue League. The Gold League will be represented by Will Ospreay, alongside Juice Robinson, Brody King, Ricochet, Claudio Castagnoli, and Darby Allin. So this will mean, we'll talk about this block first. This will include first-time matches Ospreay will have with Brody King and with Darby Allin, which Will Ospreay and Darby Allin is going to... I mean, every match in here, like, you have Ospreay in the tournament. And that is, I think, from the moment he signed, was looking at this being the ultimate showcase of Will Ospreay with all these different components. Like, you get a rematch with Ricochet, you get Ospreay and Claudio that happened on TV a while back. Ospreay and Juice, like, this, it looks like a really entertaining block. I don't know what more to say about it other than that, but what, anything that stands out in the Gold League?
In the Gold, to me, like, of the two, Gold League is probably what I'm more excited about, primarily because I'm getting Will Ospreay matches with all of these guys. Ospreay versus Allin is like, it's a major match, you know, that's a pay-per-view level match. The rematch of Ospreay and Ricochet, this time I have to think, like, maybe, oh, well, the tournament is, I guess, known for not having interference, so I guess they have that too, maybe.
They could do the draw again, but after you already did it,
Yeah, but Ospreay Castagnoli, Ospreay, like, honestly, Ospreay and anybody is going to
Darby and Brody again.
Yep.
Yeah. And Darby and Claudio, you'll do that rematch after last week. And like, Darby should get his win back in this tournament, I would think.
Yeah.
Especially because this would suggest he is not getting this title match at World's End.
Sure. Yeah. But it looks fantastic.
And then we go to the Blue League, which will feature Continental Champion Kazuchika Okada with Kyle Fletcher, Daniel Garcia, the Beast Mortos, Mark Briscoe, and Shelton Benjamin. I was a bit surprised that Shelton Benjamin got the spot in this, but they clearly see him as sort of your kind of big veteran presence of both blocks. I mean,
yeah.
So this is really we're really going to see Shelton Benjamin have the opportunity to close out and have quite the 2024 in AEW with some of the matches he's going to have here. But you also have the TNT champion in this, and I guess they will clarify if that's like another title that's up in this, or if it's just going to, like how they work that. But this one is some definitely interesting combinations, but I'm really looking at Kyle Fletcher to Daniel Garcia too. Like, he had the story coming out of last year where he underperformed, and now you have him coming back this year as a champion. But Fletcher is the one that's riding such a big hot streak, and the tournament's built around Okada.
Fletcher coming out of Saturday suddenly feels like he's maybe a prime candidate to win the entire thing, or at the very least somebody that you should really be paying attention to, because he's probably going to have an incredible 2025. Okada against anybody is still going to be a headlining match at any point. I'm actually really excited to see like a Beast Mortos in there. It's an incredible spotlight for somebody like him, who I think everybody wants to see maybe ascend to a different level. Simply being in the tournament as part of this like elite group of 12 is I think a big push for him. Same goes for Shelton Benjamin, who at the beginning of this year I did not necessarily think we'd be talking about Shelton in any sort of like significant role in professional wrestling, and I think he's already changed many of those opinions with the first two matches he's had on AEW TV. Now he's gonna get five other chances to have incredible wrestling matches, so I'm excited to see what Shelton can do.
Was there anyone that jumped out that you were like, first of all, I do think you kind of need a storyline. Like, Jay White is coming off these two big wins against Hangman Page, and one would suggest that Jay White not being in, that he would be figured into whatever Jon Moxley is doing at World's End. Just from a logic standpoint, he would be an omission.
I mean, has the Continental Classic established itself as like the top 12 period in the company? It hasn't necessarily, right? You know, like they haven't really disclosed like why somebody's in the tournament or why they aren't. So I don't necessarily ask those questions, because you can keep asking those questions. You know, why isn't
Well, we talked about it on Saturday. Like, what do you see being the World's End main event? Now, looking at the way they ended the pay-per-view, Darby is tied up with this. Like,
right.
We had Hangman Page involved. We had Jay White involved. We had Christian running in as well. Like, from a logic standpoint, like, there really is no logic for Hangman Page to somehow be involved in a title match coming off these losses to Jay White. Like, Jay White is kind of positioned as your guy that should be getting this title shot, and Christian's got a title shot. He really doesn't need to be wrestling for one.
And maybe it's Jay White.
Yeah. Then.
Yeah. Yeah. I after that segment on Saturday, John, at the very end of the show, I mean, we could have like 10 other twists and turns between now and World's End, so they could really justify anybody, I think.
All right. Well, it starts off on Wednesday. I don't think they have not announced any of the tournament matches yet for Wednesday, but it'll be happening over Dynamites and Collisions over the next month. There will also be a tournament match, probably the finals at World's End, and then the finals are January 5th at the Tokyo Dome. Bryan Danielson was on the Nikki and Brie show. They were able to book him. He was on with wife Brie, and Way. I know that. I don't know if you're a regular weekly listener of the Nikki and Brie show.
I am subscribed to it, and I might click to see if what the guests are, what the topic is. But yeah, I do subscribe to the podcast.
Okay, I listened to like 20 minutes of this today. I did not listen to the whole thing. There was only so much like gardening chat I had time for today. But
it was about their chicken coop.
Oh, I'm sorry.
They're raising chickens now. Yeah.
Okay. Well, there you go. And the chicken farmer population in AEW, perhaps an original series with Mark Briscoe. But yeah, he did talk about, it sounds as he said, we don't know what is going to happen with my neck. And it seemed to be the indication is that neck surgery is coming for him. And it seems like he is in the mental state of, he's not quite divorced from pro wrestling yet, but made the the note that I was very cautious not to say retirement, although he did clarify I did use that word leading into the sort of match, but not since, and that he was only leaving full time. And yeah, kind of just talked about kind of life at home where you don't have a return date that you're working towards and being home for Thanksgiving and spending a lot more time with his kids, but that he still is waking up in the middle of the night with ideas for pro wrestling. He loves pro wrestling and he's not labeling, you know, his career as being over yet, which it just seems to be like he's in that transitional period. And I don't even know if he's done any interviews since the I don't think he's done any interviews since the Moxley match, but yeah, this would she got the exclusive somehow.
Yeah. It's good to know he survived the suffocation.
Oh yeah, that's true. Yes.
What was the storyline? His brain will never be the same. Is that what Excalibur said? Something to that extent.
How did he sound on this?
Sounded fine, at least, but we can't really tell, of course, you know, through the magic of podcasting editing. But yeah. I mean, it sounds like his retirement is entirely contingent on what his neck is like after the surgery that he has, right? Obviously, I think if given the chance, he probably wants to continue to wrestle, but we don't know, and I don't think he knows yet either. So we await those results. Until that time, I thought it was really heartwarming to hear that this guy, like, you know, feels satisfied with his career to some level, at least, you know, compared to the first time that he had to leave, and that he can now, like, enjoy family life. He can enjoy raising chickens and spending more time taking care of his kids, you know? Like, it sounds like he's living the dream, at least, you know, temporarily. It's also interesting to maybe hear him struggle a little bit. And when I say struggle, like, it's not like the first retirement, but struggling with, like, finding a source of, like, pushing out his creativity. And I think there is some chatter about how, like, no matter what he finds, he's sure it'll annoy Brie a lot. And then you'll also have a bit of chat about whose responsibility it is to actually clean up the chicken shit. And it's usually anyway, you got to listen to the podcast. It's great.
Well, I rely on you for lost details like that. Over the weekend, we spoke about this a bit on the show. We won't go over too much, but the People versus GCW card, that is GCW's return to the Hammerstein Ballroom. WrestleTix, their latest figure is 681 tickets that they have out. Last time they did just over 2,000. And we do have now the first rollout of match announcements with Violence is Forever, Dominic Guarini, and Kevin Koo, who had a match together at Bloodsport, defending the tag titles against Cole Radrick and Alec Price. There will be a GCW Ultra Violent Title DLC match, downloadable content, and that will feature John Wayne Murdoch, Drew Parker, Brandon Kirk, Matt Tremont, and two others. So you're going to get your wild death match on this card, which was kind of one of the complaints of the last Hammerstein show. El Hijo del Vikingo against Sidney Akeem, and an open challenge issued by Josh Barnett. And they're also certainly hinting towards Alley Catch being involved in the GCW title scene with champion Mance Warner and probably maybe Effie in some form or fashion. But that was...
And Ricky Starks?
Ricky Starks, yeah, he was the big arrival at Dream on Saturday as well. So I could certainly see him being, someone featured on this show as well. And as we said today, it does feel like they are trying to take all these different flavors of GCW, like your Bloodsport portion, your big high-flying spectacular with Vikingo and Sidney Akeem, your deathmatch component, like taking all these different things and kind of remedying the criticisms of the 2022 show.
Yeah, yeah. The pressure's on them, you know. We talked earlier on our Bloodsport
review. That was a soundbite.
about, like, what they should reach in order to at least achieve the perception that this show is a success. And I think you and I both agreed maybe, like, the 1,500 range, perhaps. So the pressure's on them to make some big announcements, to drive up hype in these last few weeks to try to sell some of those tickets.
Yeah, so it's 681 tickets out, and the three shows that AEW is running coming up December 20th through 22nd, the WrestleTix updated figures, 918 tickets out for Final Battle, 1,023 for Collision, and 1,190 for Dynamite. So it's not as though, like, Dynamite even was the instant sellout at Hammerstein. I have to think those three shows, it is going to make it tougher for GCW when they're running, you know, a month earlier, and
Brett Lauderdale has suggested as much. Yes.
I mean, he's come out and said that. I understand that frustration. And, you know, he's brought up the fact that, you know, in some of these deals, you have like 30-day exclusive windows. Mm-hmm. If that wasn't negotiated in the deal, like it's unfortunate that they're running so close to you, but they're.
Yeah. So I do think, though, it presents an opportunity for GCW to
They get to be the underdog. Yes. And they're leaning into that. It's very clear through the comments Effie's made and Brett Lauderdale has made. Like, it is sort of the push that, you know, this thing is kind of stalled at like 700 tickets. And I think they're looking for, you know, we're now the underdog that the big national company is coming a month. It does put them in, I think, the light they want to position themselves
it's
in.
It's fascinating because, I mean, for the longest time, everybody was the underdog against the WWE. Now this is a position where GCW can, like, point to AEW as the big bad, you know, billionaire company that they're trying to rebel against. And does that, well, first of all, does it harm their relationship at all with an AEW, like, you know, through people like a John Moxley or like Maria Shafir? Ricky Starks clearly, you know, had the blessing to work at GCW. So, like, how much of this is part of promotion? How much of this could actually harm the relationship? And does it harm AEW's reputation in any way? Or do enough people paying attention to even this discourse for that to be effective?
I think it's kind of the one of those, like, yeah, like if you're a GCW faithful, it's kind of it's like that us against the world mentality that they I think want to you know project. I don't think this is one that it's going to have too much like attention from the wrestling world at large, but I'm very curious as we get closer. Like, that they promoted they did a really great job of promoting that first Hammerstein show, and it was a hot ticket to get, and you know, this is their second stab at it, and as we get closer we will see if they can pick up that momentum as they're getting closer.
How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today is actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
This month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, we are bringing you two editions of Rewind Away, starting off with a film review of Death Warrior. As described, the 2009 classic features five of the best mixed martial arts champions from around the world forced to play a deadly game. Plus, we tackle TNA's turning point from 2009. Karen Peterson and Bruce Lord will be covering the historic Crossover 2 event, plus an Ask Away mailbag show, Rewind to SmackDown, and Collision Course. $6 a month gets you access to the Post Wrestling Cafe. Friday Night SmackDown was first in prime time among all television Friday night. This was the bounce back after last week's numbers going against the Tyson-Jake Paul undercard. They did 1,578,000 viewers and a 0.46, beating out Fox's college football, the Golden State Warriors game on ESPN. Big increases, an increase of 28% in viewers and a 43% jump in the demo. So their largest audience since October the 11th. They were also the number one sports program Friday night in Canada with 268,000 viewers. And it was, you know, promoted around the whole Bloodline segment, but it's not like you knew you were getting Punk. You knew you were getting Heyman. This Friday, yes, it's a taped show, but the fact they're promoting the Punk Reigns segment that was obviously not taped in front of the crowd. I think they're going to do a great number for Punk and Reigns in a segment together. I mean, they had like 500 billion social impressions, whatever the stat was that we'll get into tonight. I mean, now they're in a race with these Netflix number releases. Like, we've just got to get into the millions and millions and millions of views.
They will come up with something, I'm sure. How many people subscribe to Netflix? You know, every pay-per-view is going to be the most watched blank, you know, PLE.
Oh, you're going to get all that. The percentage increases year over. Well, I should back that up because it's not like we're going to have pay-per-views on Netflix. But, I mean, for Raw.
Well, like, call them PLEs. Like, they'll say this is the most watched WrestleMania of all time. This is the most watched, you know, Royal Rumble of all time, right?
Well, you will have, you know, so many of the worldwide territories with Netflix that you are going to be able to boost increases on like a worldwide level. I'm sure they're the marketing department will be on top of the Netflix year-over-year increases. Rampage also got a bump on Friday, 249,000 viewers and a 0.09 up 34 and 61% respectively from the week prior. Their largest demo audience since September the 20th, 11th among cable programs in prime time. And I can only think that, like, the weigh-in gave some kind of like increase here with a big boom AJ. I don't think it was the conglomeration against the Dark Order is what I'm stating. And how about a Fightful reporting that this dude broke his foot during the day and battled through and did this match? I mean, is this guy going to be the he's going to be some award recipient from people at the end of the year?
I know.
It was Big Boo Boo, AJ.
Big Boo Boo. But Tony Khan, buy the rights to the U2 song right now. Give this guy a beautiful day comeback video, okay? The world. At this point, I can really, really, I almost have to assume this guy's going to come back in some form or fashion.
Yeah, this guy endeared himself to wrestling fans over the last 48 hours, I would state. But there you have it. All right, and the last notes for Tuesday night's NXT. In qualifying matches for the Iron Survivor Challenge, Julia takes on Kalani Jordan and Ethan Page faces Axiom. Fallon Henley defending the North American Championship against Tatum Paxley and Tony D'Angelo defending the North American title against Sean Spears. You know how confusing this is going to be when the main roster, too, we're going to have two Intercontinental title matches on a show and two United States title matches on a show with two North American title matches on an NXT. I mean, that's just where things
are going.
We'll
figure it out. Well, that's fine.
And then Dynamite in Chicago. As of tonight, all we know is Jericho and Ishii at the Wintrust Arena in Chicago and the start of the Continental Classic. So I would think they'll roll out some match announcements online in the coming day, hopefully.
Yeah.
Wei, what is happening Tuesday with Postmarks?
Oh, we've got a guest on. Yes, our latest edition of Postmarks is coming up. Postmarks, for people who don't know, is Bruce Lord and David Myers' profile of a lot of our listeners. They've been doing this for years at this point. They're free to listen to on the Post Wrestling Cafe feed, so just simply go to postwrestlingcafe.com, and you can actually sign up as a free member, and we'll occasionally drop bonus shows for you guys. And Postmarks is one of those monthly shows. This month's guest is Easy Cleghorn, who many of you may not have heard of, but he is somebody who I guess I've been made aware of through, like, you know, just some online interactions. He happens to be visually impaired, and we get to hear maybe the perspective of a wrestling fan who can't necessarily watch wrestling, but is able to consume it and happens to be a fan of our show. So I'm sure it'll be an interesting podcast that'll be out tomorrow on the Post Wrestling Cafe feed.
And due to Big Boom Braden and Davey Portman and their travels, Up Next will be delayed until Wednesday, and filling in for the two will be John Cena and B Detroit. So that's going to be dropping on Wednesday, and we've got a very packed day on Wednesday. Pollockham Thurston and then Rewind to Dynamite on top of it. And the last thing we'll plug is Thursday with Rewind Away number 170. And for number 170, we had to go big, and that's why we're going back to November of 2009. It's TNA Turning Point, featuring the rematch, 4 years in the making, involving AJ Styles, Christopher Daniels, and Samoa Joe for the TNA Heavyweight Championship, plus Kurt Angle versus Desmond Wolfe, and a Falls Count Anywhere match between Scott Steiner and Bobby Lashley, where Scott Steiner, his pursuit is Bobby Lashley's wife.
Okay.
Buckle up. It's a 2009 TNA. So that is going to be on the docket for Thursday, postwrestlingcafe.com. $6. Sign up for the cafe. You get access to all of our extra shows, including our Bloodsport review today, all the shows we just listed, and then Rewind to SmackDown Friday night. Collision Course will be coming out this weekend as well. John Cena and Kate will take you through all 3 hours of AEW and lots more. You can go back, listen to some Death Warrior commentary with Brandon from New Jersey joining us. Plenty to be found on the Post Wrestling Cafe.
Postwrestling.com/gift is also where you can now give gifts of Post Wrestling Cafe memberships to perhaps a loved one, somebody you think would enjoy our shows, somebody who you simply think would want to support Post Wrestling and everything we do. Postwrestling.com/gift. You can choose any tier for as many months as you'd like to give. Perfect for the holiday season.
Yeah, maybe I should give this to my brother for Christmas. Would that be a good idea?
Yeah, of course. Of course.
He would never redeem this. He would delete us faster than you could blink. So there you have it, everybody. Postwrestlingcafe.com. A great stocking stuffer. We fit right into the stocking, me and Wei.
Both
Christmas
of us.
Morning,
sure.
Wake up to a Post Wrestling Cafe subscription. What more could you possibly want?
Nothing. Nothing.
Nothing at all. On to the show we go from the Desert Diamond Arena. WrestleTix number 12,791. Joe Tessitore announcing 13,216. So we're talking like a difference of 400. So we were very close here. A sellout, giant crowd here in Arizona in the wonderful Glendale. And out to start the show is Gunther, who comes out and Jackie Redmond is in the ring to interview him and states how, you know, Damian Priest doesn't think you're a confident champion after your loss at Crown Jewel. And before Gunther can address these claims, Priest comes down and thinks that the pressure has gotten to Gunther. He's lost his aura, his killer vibe, and the fact is you have never faced a problem like me. And what's going to happen when you lose to someone from the street? And Gunther has no response, and you think he's going to just take off and leave, but then he drills Damian Priest with a microphone, starts attacking him, and they fight their way to the floor. The desk gets cleared, but Priest lifts up Gunther and puts him through the desk with a razor's edge for a big pop, and then hoists up the belt as we go into the Survivor Series.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I've been thinking, I don't know about you, John, but I feel like Priest has sounded a lot more human in recent weeks. Like this segment, he almost came out like speaking with, he felt like he was speaking with more of a New Yorker accent than we've seen him as his heel incarnation, where I sensed he was just a bit more uptight, a bit more like satanic. And here he was a lot more like, you know, New Yorker. So maybe he's just done some moving, you know, in the time since he's lost the championship. But I like this Damian Priest. He talks about Gunther and perhaps feeling the pressure of being a champion. It really does, to me at least, feel like in Damian Priest's speaking performances, it feels like he's a lot more comfortable. It feels like he's a lot more charismatic too.
Less Vin Diesel.
What are you talking about? Vin Diesel is the most charismatic man in the world. Okay, how do you get more charismatic than Vin Diesel? He's more Vin Diesel, if anything. All right.
Well, I think you could dial it down a little on the influences, but yeah. I mean, this has been such a I don't want to say simple, but it's just been like the former champion is coming, and Gunther was his confidence shattered losing to Cody. So trying to squeeze some juice out of that loss to mean something for Crown Jewel and going into this match. Like this match really didn't need to be a big focus of Survivor Series, and the build's been fine. Like you have like a simple story, and I don't think they're overdoing it with like just coming up with all these crazy angles to lead to this.
Yeah. I don't think really anybody's buying Damian Priest's chances of beating Gunther in this match. But I think they've done everything they could. They had Priest basically like stand atop of Gunther 2 weeks in a row, and that's very, very unusual for Gunther, but it's also the type of story that they're telling. So I do think Priest has gained something by having at least this spotlight to show that he's changed slightly as a babyface top guy.
There was a recap of Jade Cargill's attack, and they've got a laundry list of injuries, and the report from the Wrestling Observer is that there is a legitimate injury that Jade Cargill is dealing with. And the way it was handled here, Bianca Belair is with Naomi backstage, and Belair just says it's bad what's happened to Jade and that she's going to be gone for a while and they need to find the attacker. Io proposes having Kairi Sane join the team as the fifth woman. Naomi proposes Bayley, and then Rhea Ripley enters. She doesn't care as long as they leave her alone with Liv Morgan, and Belair explains that she's got to put this team on her back and win the advantage match tonight, and then they can figure it out.
Mm-hmm. So as we conclude both sets of men's fifth man storylines, we find that we have a bonus one here with the women and who the fifth woman is going to be as part of this new babyface team. I whether or not, you know, like, I wonder what they would have planned to build this matchup if not for this story being told, because I think this story being told suddenly makes this women's team much more interesting, in particular Bianca Belair. This segment entirely put the spotlight on her. Her and, you know, Belair and Bayley have had this long-standing rivalry that has always been, I think, incredibly, like, one of the more interesting things about the dynamics here. And this kind of puts that into the forefront. Belair's inability to perhaps be a second to a leader in Rhea Ripley is also really interesting, and they managed to showcase that. So I thought all of this put good focus on Belair's insecurities and kind of made her a much more interesting character.
Rey Mysterio and Dragon Lee against the Creeds in a tornado tag match. And we had some great stuff in this match, in particular with the Creeds. There's a spot where Brutus gets put in the Tree of Woe, and Dragon Lee is about to go for the double stomp when Julius leaps to the top and superplexes Dragon Lee. Lee comes back with his flying Rana over the top, sending Brutus onto the apron, and then Julius cuts off a 619. We come back, and the Creeds are on the turnbuckle with Lee when Ray hits a 619 into their shins, setting up a double stomp from Lee, and then Ray with the sliding splash, Lee dives to the floor, and Ray sets up Julius on the rope, but then Brutus is behind, throws him into the corner where the referee is, and this allows Gable to get onto the apron and twist the mask of Ray so he's blind and gets rolled up by Julius in 10 minutes and 45 seconds.
Good match. Really great showcase for the Creeds. Julius delivering a number of like very flashy moves in this one. Some nice crowd taunting from the two of them too. So, I mean, they're really playing those douchebag characters really well, I think. Ray can always get a great reaction despite not really being booked in anything significant for a while now. So, good match. We'll see if this is leading to something bigger for, what is it? What are they called now? American Made?
Mask versus hair, and Chad Gable can continue his transformation into Kurt Angle.
Wow. Okay.
Like, let's just go all the way.
Yeah, why not? Sure. Yeah.
I will skip Chad Gable feuding with Booker T.
Oh, I would love that. Shampoo.
No, yeah. That was the 2005 feud, if you remember.
Oh, right. Okay.
CM Punk's return on SmackDown, more than 72 million social views. I'd be pissed if this all, like, what about Paul Heyman's return? Why doesn't he gets as much credit as CM Punk here?
True.
Cody's going to be on The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon on Thursday. Maybe Fallon will ask him about Big Boom AJ coming on a few weeks ago. No. Judgment Day is in the back. Liv is worried about this advantage match, and then R-Truth is there hiding from Butch. And Balor threatens him, so Truth explains that Thanksgiving is off. And Balor tells Liv they need the advantage, blames Dominic and Carlito for not getting it done with War Raiders last week, but at least you guys softened them up. And Finn explains that there's no leaders around here, but when you listen to me, we are one happy, successful family.
Mm-hmm. So there are no leaders, but when everyone listens to Finn, they are successful. So he's the leader who says he isn't the leader.
Yeah, I don't know how successful this unit has been post Damian Priest in storyline. They certainly get a lot less segments on TV.
Well, I mean, they're still holders of two.
This is really, this is the Liv and Dom show. That's what the Judgment Day is these days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then it was time for the match of the year. This should have happened at Bloodsport, but we got it on Raw. Braun Breaker against Ludwig Kaiser. Braun is just a babyface. Let's just accept that. This man's awesome to watch, and fans are ready for it. And in this match like a babyface, and he was tremendous.
Well, he was up against Ludwig Kaiser, who's an actual heel. Braun has kind of existed in a bit of a tweener role, depending on who he's facing, but he was definitely a babyface tonight.
So Braun starts the match by kneeling in the corner. And then he turns and just sprints at Kaiser and then suplex him. And he runs these ropes and he's going at a crazy speed as he takes this guy's head off with a clothesline. Kaiser manages to poke him in the eye, takes a gut buster. And then Ludwig Kaiser goes to the floor and he staggers by the desk. And Braun is on the other side of the ring and he picks up speed. And this guy runs so goddamn fast. into the table, and this man had a death wish. It's like, it's me versus the table. I could not imagine building up this amount of speed knowing that I'm going to run full force into this. He not only hit this table, he went for like the corner of this table. It's like, puncture my lung. That's my purpose here. This was insane. I watched this like four times.
You know, wrestlers are incredible, incredibly insane.
This guy is ascending to another level of it. I mean, this guy could be their Darby.
Oh man, that's a pretty high bar.
So Kaiser logically is in control after this table spot, and Braun fights back. The fans are cheering him. He hits his no hands Frankensteiner. The straps come down, but the spear gets stopped with an enziguri. And then as Kaiser is sent to the floor, Sheamus runs down attacking Kaiser for the DQ, and we get a massive pull apart with the three, and Adam Pearce making this a triple threat for the Survivor Series. And this should just be a great match on Saturday. Like, let these three go out there and just go wild for 12 minutes.
Yeah, yeah. I'm looking forward to it. You know, I feel like we all saw this coming after the DQ last week. This built to the three-way gets Kaiser up in the IC Tuttle level mix. And do you see either of them having a chance of, either Sheamus or Kaiser, having a chance of dethroning Braun?
I'll say no. No, I don't think so.
No, I don't think so yet. Braun's still building up steam.
Maybe but I think what you could do is have Braun dispose of Kaiser, and you still have the Braun-Sheamus match to go to for a Saturday night's main event or TV, and build up another Sheamus title challenge. And at that point, like, maybe the next Sheamus title challenge should be the time you're like putting
this. I don't think so. I don't
think he needs to win it, but maybe it's somewhere in the foreseeable future.
I don't think Sheamus needs to win the IC title until he's ready to actually end his career. Like, that should be his, that's his final story, you know? The
Man,
only
you
thing
imagine Cena, Tanahashi, Mako Satomura, and Sheamus. They all
say
bid farewell.
So. I can't handle it.
Kathy Kelly spoke with the Usos and Sami Zayn, and they were shocked about CM Punk. We were ready to die for this, 4-on-5. And Zayn explains how Punk is a complicated guy, and he's had his issues with people, including Reigns, but the two are going to sit down and talk this Friday. And when Sammy questions if they can trust him, Jimmy explains that Heyman told them that we can trust him, and that was that. And it's going to be Jay against Jacob Fatu in the Advantage match, which, again, it was taped. We'll avoid revealing results, but that's happening Friday.
Mm-hmm. It seems to suggest that they're taking this too easily, and that like Sammy should be the one we should actually be believing, and that obviously some tensions will arise between the team members on Friday.
Did you see the people just dissecting that scene, and Paul Heyman giving a wink to Jimmy Uso? And I mean, people are just
really, what are they saying? I haven't really looked into it. No, were there QR codes involved?
Well, it's like what did the red shirt mean? What did the wink mean?
What are they suggesting? What's really at play here?
That you're going to get some kind of Heyman turn or Jimmy turn, or I mean, there's a million theories out there.
Let's see. Let's find out.
Yeah, I would state that if there's anyone with a big gripe here, it would be Heyman. That okay? They explain the phone being destroyed, but you're telling me that after Heyman was destroyed, being put through a table, he's been gone for months, that last week was the first time Roman tried to call him and check in on him, learning that the phone was disconnected.
Are we going back to that? You never called me to check up on me as the reason for the turn?
I mean, how many heel turns have generated from just a lack of phone call or email? That has brought down... That was the end of Drew and Sheamus's friendship.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, always call people. Yes.
Yeah, you always got to call them. Finn Balor and JD McDonagh defended the tag titles against War Raiders that they've been building up for several weeks. And this was our Joe Tessitore date reminder. Wade, didn't they win the tag titles on June 24th? It's the end of November. This is only their second title defense. Which means, great news for Jade Cargill. She could be out for months and not have to defend these tag titles.
They kind of have set that precedent, haven't they? You know, mm-hmm. This is pretty ridiculous when you really look at
it. I couldn't believe this. I was like... It sounds right. It sounds
true.
About right. Yeah.
According to Cage Match, it's true. I mean, they've had like dark match and like, I guess, live event title defenses, but those don't really, count. On top of that, they've actually lost like several matches as a tag team here.
Really?
They've lost to Jay and Sammy, all right, in a non-title match. Like, that was the match that we thought,
right.
Oh,
yeah, yeah.
They're going to, like, do Jay and Sammy going for the championship. Never happened. Then they lost to Jay and Damian Priest. And that was a title shot that never came to fruition either. So something
maybe Jay's kicking and screaming. He doesn't want to go backwards in his career. He's avoiding these title shots. Yeah. So Ivar hits a cannonball off the apron. We go to break. Judgment Day has the advantage, and they just cut the ring off with Eric for the longest time. He's trying and trying to get to the ropes. And then Balor misses in the corner, and we get the tag to Ivar, who's in. They hit a fallout onto Balor, and Dom and Carlito run down, get knocked off the apron. They hit the war machine on JD, but Dominic is back to get the foot on the rope, and Joe Tessitore is just apoplectic. Dirty Dom, really? Eric then takes out Dominic and Carlito on the floor, and Ivar goes to the top, but Balor is behind the ref, snaps the neck on the top rope, allowing JD to pin Ivar in 9 minutes and 54 seconds. And that was that. The second title defense for JD McDonagh and Finn Balor.
The third. Wait, no, third?
They said this was the second.
Oh,
that's what,
wow.
That's what Tessitore said.
That's amazing.
I didn't check their record, so I'm going off of what he said.
Whatever. I mean, that's kind of their shtick, right? You know, yeah. they're just kind of holding onto the titles and not really defending them. But the crowd were really into the War Raiders here. The best crowd reaction they probably received in maybe years at this point. I don't know. Successful. I wonder where they go from here. So, who are the other contenders really in this division? The building of the Creed's up. But baby faces? Like, who are your baby face contenders?
Yeah, you. Well, I mean,
Lee and Ray lost.
Oh, Otis and Tozawa are now on a winning streak.
True. Like, I'll have a lot of jokey tag teams or like tag teams that people don't take seriously. The New Day.
If they do the angle, there's two ways to do next week's angle, and I think regardless we're getting a breakup, but you could prolong it. And as we've mentioned, the Brett Owen. We spoke over Thanksgiving, and what better way than to channel our aggression against the Quebecers, and then we get the explosion. And that is what they promote next, the New Day's 10th anniversary that will be next week in, of all places, Everett, Washington. And Woods and Kingston are watching this promo, and that's all they needed. Xavier's like, you know what, man, I love you. Let's squash these issues we've been having.
This was a Thanksgiving segment.
Unfortunately, this was a very quick meal, and Wood says it's going to be the greatest night of their careers next week as they head out for this match.
Yeah, and, I guess notable here, because I don't necessarily think you might mention this, John, but they're wearing Dragon Ball Z Goku inspired gear. And
you interrupted me as I was about to explain.
Apologies. Please explain, John.
This was a reference because what they are missing is Goku, who maybe will be returning for the anniversary next week.
No, not at all.
Okay, I have no idea.
Close. Kofi's wearing the orange and blue traditional Son Goku gear, and Woods is wearing Goku black gear, which is a heel version of Goku from Dragon Ball Super.
Why didn't Kofi ask him about that? He would know, right? If he's got the protagonist colors, why are you wearing this?
You'd figure. You know, they must both be fans. Maybe he doesn't watch Super. He's just a Z fan.
Yeah. Now I got to be worried about if you ever wear like gray and red. I because that would fool me. I wouldn't know. I wouldn't see it coming.
If we ever coordinate in Dragon Ball colors, be on the lookout.
So they mentioned that next week, this was on the release they had out today, that next week's episode will feature a 10-year photo gallery, the New Day's best matches, and an exclusive sit-down interview. That's going to be on YouTube. I think these might be.
What's a photo gallery going to do for Raw?
Sorry, this is stuff that's going to be online as well. Okay, so that will be on. I don't think they're giving us a segment of a slideshow. Yeah, that would be. We only got 2 hours here. But anyway, so regardless, you're probably getting a big angle next week. They showed the signs of the night. I only bring this up because one of them read Heyman for president, and Wade's response was, it could be worse, right?
Yeah.
They showed Vanessa Hudgens in the crowd, and that took us...
A very legitimate fan.
Yeah. I mean, no, that's Photoshop.
This was not the shirt Sorry, somebody photoshopped it. This looks like David Hasselhoff, but she was wearing a Roman Reigns.
She was definitely. I remember the shirt she was wearing.
It's a good Photoshop. Yeah, she's wearing a Roman Reigns shirt. She was throwing out the one, twirling her hair.
How does that thought even enter someone's mind to go and do that so quickly and that being where their direction went? The Hoff.
Oh, it's a Jeff Garcia shirt.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's not David Hasselhoff.
I'm sorry. Well,
there you have it. New Day against Otis and Akira Tozawa. So after this wonderful promo aired, Woods and Kofi, they can't argue over who's going to start. Kofi's in the ring, so Woods immediately tags himself in and gets, because of the wasted time, Otis runs them over, hits a caterpillar on Kofi, and then Tozawa comes off the top with his big senton and pins Woods in a minute seven. And this is...
The fact that it was Tozawa getting the pin is perfect.
You had to make this the most humiliating loss. A 60-second loss to Tozawa. Yeah. Like, you had to do it to necessitate what was to come.
The lowest rung guy on the active, like, Raw roster. Getting, like, as far as I remember, the only pin. Like, when was the last time Akira Tozawa got a pin?
I think someone said Otis hasn't had a win since, like, last year on NXT or something. Like that, at least on television or something. Yeah. Double-check that. But what we got after this.
Highlight of the show.
They're arguing as they leave the ring. And they're just walking to the back, and you think this is just their normal argument, and then we'll cut to the next scene. No, the camera follows them to the back. This would have driven Tony Khan insane. And Wood starts yelling at Kofi, telling him, run the damn play. You just can't listen. You think you're bigger than everyone else. And we follow them, and now Woods is turning up the volume. He says, you're wrestling like garbage, Kofi. Kingston explains, I've been helping you. I gave you my Intercontinental title shot, and you fumbled the title shot. You fumbled the crown. There's a reason that me and E never let you call the plays. You're too reckless, and you take unnecessary risks. Wood says, I remember when you were too terrified to take any risks and could never get a world title shot until I came along and took those risks for you. I'm the reason you became champion. Oh, really? I was a Hall of Famer before I even met you. That's why you asked me to be part of this group. You still haven't won a singles title. And you know why you haven't won a singles title, Woods? Because you're not good enough. And it's not my fault. Woods explains, I was good enough to fight for you. I was good enough to fight your battles. Me and Big E helped create Kofi Mania. We handed it to you on a platter, and you pissed it away in 6 seconds, losing to Brock Lesnar. And Kofi is fuming. Like, we have never seen Kofi in this state before. Mm-hmm. Explain, if you were anybody else. And then he ends it, I'll see you at the reunion, brother. And Woods, if this was on purpose, I thought this was like the most scathing correction. Mm-hmm. I'll see you at the anniversary. And as
can't even
that,
remember your lines,
oh,
right?
Oh, man, this was like this was just a dig right at the end, and Kofi walks off. One of the best segments these two have ever been part of. This was excellent. I thought these two were so great. And, I mean, listen, I was a little critical of this feud. It's been a long road to this, but, man, was this moment this would have been so flat if this had come like 3 weeks into these arguments. You know what I mean? It just would have felt, it would not have felt authentic, because nobody buys these two as hating each other, but they built it and they built it and they put everything into this segment. I just thought this set the stage for something big next Monday for the segment. And
something big. I see what you did there.
Well, yes, I think for sure you need to see him there, but I think to your audience,
Kofi let it slip. It's a reunion.
He kind of did let everyone in on that. But yeah, I think regardless of what you think the outcome is going to be, you know it's going to be something significant, that this whole angle has been leading towards this anniversary. Yeah.
By the end of this segment, this felt like it was a breakup moment 10 years in the making. So you knew it had to be good, and it was. They completely delivered on that. The lines that they had for each other were... deep cutting, man, like deeper than I thought that they would get, you know, in the body of this particular feud. And by the end, I would say like this was, you never want to see your friends fight, but like I also feel like this was one of those like arguments that was kind of cathartic, because the tension had been so well built and so pent up throughout months, it feels like, at this point. So in this segment, though, it's like they went a lot deeper than I was expecting, because they weren't just talking about the recent months and weeks of, you know, this sort of like Woods being the quarterback type of storyline. They were at least telling us that their tensions started way before that. You know, it was like Kofi revealing that he and E never saw Woods as a leader because he was making a lot of, you know, unnecessary risky decisions. It was Woods feeling like Kofi doesn't take enough risks, and how Woods, I guess, risk-taking, which I never necessarily thought was like a character trait of his, but okay, like I'll accept it. But, you know, it's Woods feeling like Kofi not taking enough risk was the reason why, you know, he was so unsuccessful until Kofi Mania. And then it just continues to escalate. It's Kofi telling Woods that he's not good enough. It's Woods telling Kofi that he's responsible for Kofi Mania. And to top it all off with the Brock Lesnar line, Kofi Kingston did not sell that Brock Lesnar loss for 5 years. And they waited at least for this moment to finally acknowledge it. And you can tell, like, from Kofi's perspective, just the mention of that line was probably enough to really kind of set him off. So not to mention the fact that, like, mentioning Lesnar at this moment is still a little bit taboo. So it got a bit of a reaction, I'm sure, for that reason as well. The passion, though, from these two in the segment, I think was just amazing. And it showed you how strong of a performer both of them are in these sort of talking segments in the back. And it's just begging for Big E to come back to hopefully play peacemaker. That pop is going to be huge. So the question is, can he make peace or will he cement the breakup?
Yeah. I mean, they really set this up for next week to be like this should probably be the main event segment on the show for what it feels like the show should be structured around. And I mean, the outline of this show, that you could have all the big moments airing throughout the night, and like you're going to have your audience like in this state to do something great. Like if you do this breakup, I think it could be so well executed next week. If they do it right, and this certainly gave you that confidence that they're that they can pull this off in a really effective way.
Yeah. And do you think if they at the end of this don't break up, that the audience will, like, I think the audience will react well to them not breaking up. You know what I mean? Like, I don't necessarily think everybody wants these two to have a feud with each other.
I think especially after this segment, it will almost feel as though we're dipping our toe into like the most interesting Xavier Woods and Kofi have been in so long that to take it away would almost feel like it's not exploring an evolution for these characters. They did so great in this lead up and tonight that it would almost feel like they are it's just like you're not advancing the story if you have the happy reunion type of story.
Because in the end, if they get back together, what are they going to go for? Another tag team title? They've told that story enough, you know, and it's just not as interesting as both of them feuding with each other, and then maybe eventually one of them going for a singles championship. Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chopped Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA Podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chopped-tees.com/post-wrestling.
Then we go to the final testament, and The Miz arrives.
This Karrion Kross, take a victory lap. You were right about everything, okay? As he says, it's another one for the Karrion Kross record. He was totally right about Kofi and Woods, wasn't he?
He nailed it.
Nailed it.
So The Miz comes in warning them that the Wyatts are here, but they didn't see The Miz. So now Karrion has the idea that we can play our own games, but Scarlett, you stay here. And they leave the room, and not 5 seconds later, Scarlett looks into the mirror, and we are taken back to the Ultimate Warrior in WCW, where she sees Nikki Cross in the reflection of the mirror as we go to commercial break. An unfortunate commercial break. I hope that this camera operator stepped in here, but I don't think he did.
Invisible camera in this case. Yeah.
And then when we come back, the final testament, they are searching for the Wyatts. They spent 3 minutes and 30 seconds during the commercial break searching for them, gave up, came back. They run into Butch, who is looking for R-Truth, the feud no one is asking for updates on. And they return to the locker room. Scarlett is freaking out as we read on the mirror, everyone has something to lose.
Mm-hmm. So what does that mean? That means everybody could be threatened.
When is the 1 year anniversary of the final testament?
Well, you got to wait for 10. All right. Okay.
And that's when Paul Ellering will have his big return. Little E.
Mm. Sure.
They also promoted the CM Punk behind the scenes video that they put up on YouTube. Profile as everyone's, you know, as Punk got to the arena and signed that contract, the first thing he signed over that privacy, and they had a camera on this guy and they waited a year to put this footage out. This was him arriving at the Allstate Arena at the conclusion of the War Games match, and he's surrounded by Bruce Pritchard, William Regal, his pal, Paul Levesque. Interestingly, Stephanie McMahon also there at Gorilla. And this was after her last resignation from the company. And there she was at Gorilla. And then going out, getting the big pop, and then being embraced by members of the match and the locker room afterward. It was a cool video that they put up.
Very cool video. Very fascinating to see, just to see his first interactions with a lot of these people. I mean, several of them, I think you can already tell, like, you know, Punk already had some of those initial interactions, but there was definitely, like, unspoken awkward tension that you might be able to read into some of those interactions, just given the history he had stepping back into the company at this point, right? A lot of, like, just this, like, really interesting mixture of, like, excitement from certain people and tension from others that it's just incredibly captivating as a fan and follower of this guy's particular backstage story.
Then this was interesting. We go to this video. And it's like earlier tonight, and it's Adam Pearce in the ring making this announcement of the introduction of the Women's Intercontinental Championship as a tournament will begin next week. Was this like before the show went on the air? Like, when was this?
Before the show. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I guess they just didn't have enough time for a full segment.
I guess not. Well, there you go. We got the introduction of the Women's Intercontinental title. More belts, more tournaments, and hopefully this title can have more than two defenses in a period of 5 months.
So we were wondering if this, the Women's U.S. Championship would be a cross-promotional title. The bigger question being, do they have enough of a women's sort of mid-tier roster for there to justify a title per brand? Obviously, they felt the answer was yes, because here we are. I get the sense they're going to be feeding a lot more women from NXT onto both rosters. You know, this might also give some credence to suggestions that not only is Raw going to go back to 3 hours, but maybe a SmackDown might be going to 3 hours as well, and therefore maybe more time for these sort of matches. But they're going to have to do some building of that mid-card division for both of the shows.
Then they ran down the Survivor Series card, so it is now up to 5 matches because we got the addition of both the Triple Threat Intercontinental title match and LA Knight against Shinsuke Nakamura for the United States title.
So how many matches are we at now?
We're at 5, so I don't imagine there will be any more than that given the War Games matches, but we are getting the 5-match format on the show.
Right.
Women's War Games team, Nia tells them she's going to go out there and squash Belair. And then we had a video from the new Bloodline with Solo Sikoa tipping his cap to Roman Reigns for what he pulled off with Punk and Heyman. They took their best shot. Now it's my turn. And it's a promotion for Fatu and Jey Uso on Friday. Main event, Nia Jax, Bianca Belair in the advantage match. Wade Barrett, sit down for this theory, okay? Wade Barrett thinks that someone on Nia Jax's team injured Jade Cargill because they are the beneficiaries. And I just could not help but wonder how many cold cases might be solved if Wade Barrett had chosen a different vocation.
somebody needs to point out the obvious, okay? Sometimes
we
sometimes
have five suspects because they benefited from this. That is the only options we can have.
What did Dawkins say? Sometimes the snake lies likes to crawl in the grass, whatever he said. All right.
Wade had some lines on the show. Naya hit a leg drop off the second turnbuckle, only gets a two count, and then she's trying for the Annihilator and is stopped on the buckle. And as Belair suplexes her off, the turnbuckle pad gets ripped off. So you knew that was going to pay dividends. Belair tries for the KOD, can't lift her, and then takes an avalanche into the exposed buckle. And Jax takes her to the floor, clears the desk, and puts her through the desk with a Samoan drop. And she's waiting for the count out victory. She goes to pose on the turnbuckle that she had just rammed Bianca in when Bayley appears, yanks Naya's leg, sending her face into the exposed buckle, and Belair just regenerates to full power, runs to the top for a 450 splash, and pins Nia Jax, and then shares a smile with Bayley, who will be your fifth woman in the War Games match.
So you assume. Or did they officially announce it?
I mean, she's coming out with the team on Friday, so I think everyone can assume that is our fifth woman here.
Oh, spoilers.
Sorry. I mean, this to me was pretty much made it clear.
Yeah, it was, yeah. So, you know, I felt like, given the circumstances, they did a good enough job of building to it. I do feel like this, like with all the War Games reunions, this felt like it could have been told throughout, like, weeks of storytelling with Bianca and Belair finally, like, you know, warming up to each other through moments.
All I had to do was, like, yank some woman's leg. That was a lot easier than all the other ways I was trying to make amends.
Yeah, I also do feel like Belair's reactions in this match, especially in these moments, were almost a little too overreacted and too obvious. Like, oh my god, I can't believe you helped me. Oh,
they also had
you.
Like 20 seconds after to finish this. It, like, they were racing to the finish here that I feel they, like, we kind of, I think both had to speed things up because they went right to the limit.
Yeah. They had to tell a quick story in a short amount of time. Ideally, there'd be more time to it. But overall, I thought they turned this unfortunate injury into, like, good fodder for this episode of Raw.
I would say tonight's Raw, I guess, I don't think this had, like, the spark that Friday's show had. But nonetheless, I think they built up the War Games matches pretty effectively this year as well. Gunther and Priest is just a very straightforward title match, but I don't have any complaints about that program. And specific to this show, I really did enjoy, especially the Creeds on this show. I think Julius Creed is someone that I just see that guy. He's great being in a tag team. He should be in a tag team at the moment, but you can certainly see a lot for him.
Good overall build for all the necessary parts of Survivor Series that they had to get to. A lot on this show, actually. They couldn't even really fit in the Adam Pearce, you know, IC title segment. But the highlight of the show was the New Day segment. Yeah,
that was the high point of the show. And I imagine, hopefully, if it's done well, it should be the high point next week as well.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yes.
Hopefully so not rushed with, like, you know, like, this final segment.
Yeah, I mean, maybe Xavier will just shoot him a smile, and that's how we'll end the show next week, and him and Kofi will smile. All right, so there is Raw heading into the show this coming weekend. A reminder, Way and I will be live after the Survivor Series, and the show starts at 6 Eastern. I'm still guessing this one's going to go close to 4 hours. That's my impression. But if we're on at 10, I'm happy. So that's probably around the time we will be live free here on the Post Wrestling YouTube channel. Be so kind as to hit the subscribe button. But now we hand the show over to you for super chats and forum feedback.
Hey, no super chats, but I want to thank Pterodactyl24 for becoming a new member of our YouTube channel.
Pterodactyl, all 24 of them.
I do usually recommend people sign up through Patreon if they want to get our bonus content, because it's $2 cheaper on Patreon. But there are people that just prefer the YouTube system where they want video access permanently to all of our bonus content. So for those of you who choose to do that, you could sign up through our YouTube channel just by clicking the join button on a desktop. All right, let's go to Saeed from Vancouver, John.
an okay go-home show. It's going to be interesting next week for the New Day anniversary. One can hope that Big E can help fix the troubles brewing, but I think it explodes next week, especially after the intense segment tonight. I have this feeling that Naomi is behind the Jade attack, but who knows, and I have not seen any spoilers for SmackDown, but I think it's safe to say Bayley is the fifth member. Find it interesting keeping Kevin Owens off of the show, as it's in Canada. Great chemistry between the two teams in the... Oh, yeah, we skipped over that on the news. We'll talk about that in a minute, but great chemistry between the two teams in the Lee and Ray versus American Made match. Fingers crossed I get to see Sheamus win the belt on Saturday. I'll be there live at Survivor Series if you guys would like a live recap from the show afterward, or for anyone available on Thursday. You can meet Chelsea Green for free at BC Place Gate C at the Survivor Series store, and Io Sky on Friday. Okay, there's your WWE PR message right there. You can go meet Chelsea Green and Io Sky at the Survivor Series store, and yes, Saeed, have a good time, and if you want to post any feedback with a live perspective, we welcome it.
Owens and Cody.
That's right. So today they confirmed that would be Saturday night's main event on December 14th on Long Island. So yes, not happening on this show, which is really interesting that they're not promoting anything for Cody on this show this coming Saturday. They could have some involvement on the show potentially, but I mean, the show is like, they don't need to sell any more tickets, and they've got a really big hook with, you know, Punk and Reigns. It doesn't need it. You don't have to have every last star, and the show's kind of sold at this point for most.
Yeah, just because he's Canadian from Quebec, you know, doesn't mean he needs to be on a show in Vancouver, I suppose.
And if you're telling the story, why put him in that scenario where he's going to get a big babyface reaction? Like, it's cool for that night and for that crowd, but you are telling a larger story, and that's not the... You don't want that reaction for Cody, and you don't want that reaction for Owens. And and it is it tells you like that they are building the Saturday night's main event to be like, we have that, and we have the US title final announced so far. So it'll be a big show.
But I don't rule out something, you know, backstage or something happening on the body of the 4 hour show, for instance. Yeah. All right. Up next, let's go to apologies. I got to draw this up. Maybe why don't you go, John?
We have Ani here who says, good episode of Raw. Some nice in-ring action between the LWO and American Made. Braun, Kaiser, and Belair Jax as well. The show flew by, as it does in the two-hour era. New Day segment after the match was also very good. The story has been layered and told very well. Eager to see Big E on next week's episode. However, when this was the best weekly show for me, it had a mix of box office angles and in-ring work. All the big programs... However, when this was the best weekly show for... Okay, he's talking about when he enjoyed this show more. It had the mix. All the big programs are currently on SmackDown. I mean, certainly for this cycle, you do have like the Bloodline angle primarily being told over on SmackDown, including with like Sami Zayn kind of migrating to that show. So I do see that. And you've got Cody and Owens there. So it is kind of... For this pay-per-view cycle, it is... on Friday.
But SmackDown was really lacking at that time, you know, when all the big angles were happening on Raw. So, I mean, for me, it just kind of comes down to like Roman Reigns, CM Punk, in this case on Raw, Drew McIntyre and CM Punk, you know, as like the big difference factor. So maybe we're talking about whatever show CM Punk's on happens to be the big show. But I don't think the two-hour Raws have been necessarily bad. I think they've just not been as good as maybe Raw has been prior to it. Let's go to... Oh, by the way, like Kofi did say reunion, okay? So why are we ruling out the return of Odyssey Jones?
I mean, if you're going to bring... All the members come back, all four. I mean, how could you have a reunion without what? Maybe that's the heel turn. Is everyone thinks Big E is coming, and then Xavier brings the missing member of this reunion, and then Woods and Odyssey leave together.
Oh, yeah, wow!
I don't think that one's happening.
All right, let's go to Muggin, who says, a decent show that got to the finish line for Vancouver. The New Day's impending implosion stole the episode. Either way, the 10th anniversary will evoke tears. The women's IC titles was as I expected. The design looks great as it blends the old and new. I bet the finals will be on the Netflix premiere. Gunther being insecure adds another dimension to his character as he tries to get his swagger back. Jade's exit from War Games presents an opportunity for Bianca and Bayley to bury the hatchet. Look, this whodunit better not play it safe and use this as an excuse to rekindle this feud. I've had my fill of those two going back and forth. I have spoken.
And then he slams the mic, and Brian picks up. Since Muggin broke his mic by slamming it, I'll keep my feedback brief. My favorite part of this episode, a tremendous segment between Kofi and Woods. The biggest heartbreak will be big. The biggest heartbroken will be Big E's.
Mm-hmm.
Right. What if these two come to blows and then we just cut?
Are you talking about Kofi and Woods or Brian and Muggin?
Both. Oh, yeah. That could be. they could come to blows as well. But man, we just cut to the back and there's Big E waiting to come out with flowers and we just see him in tears watching this.
I think he needs a bigger role than that.
Okay. Well. All right. Well, thank you, everyone, as always, for your feedback and your thoughts on tonight's show. We are coming back on Wednesday. Triple header at Post Wrestling. I'll be live with Brandon Thurston, 1 p.m. Eastern time. And then we've got Rewind to Dynamite on Wednesday night and Rewind Away Thursday, chatting TNA Turning Point 2009, featuring the rematch from Unbreakable 2005 with AJ Daniels and Samoa Joe. Plus Kurt Angle against Desmond Wolfe, a Falls Count Anywhere match between Scott Steiner and Bobby Lashley featured on this card. Plenty happening in TNA as they are awaiting the arrival of Hulk Hogan and Eric Bischoff.
The calm before the storm.
That is it. Okay, so we're going to sign off. Thanks to everyone for tuning in, and we will speak with you later this week.
How do you feel when you switch to GEICO and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today is actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with GEICO feels just like that. Get more with GEICO.